Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
So, Father Daniel, in our last episode, we were talking as we ended about genetics. And so I'm going to begin this episode on the same topic here. So American Eagle Jeans featured an ad with actress Sydney Sweeney that brought an uproar, complaining the ad was code for support for eugenics.
Hold on. Chris, you lost me there with Sydney Sweeney. Who's Sydney Sweeney?
She's a beautiful, young, blonde gal who can't act worth a lick, but continues
but
to
somehow
get...
she's gotten popular.
Because
she must be pretty or
she's
something.
She's pretty. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. Got it. So pretty actress, Sydney Sweeney, and she's doing these ads
She did this ad for American Eagle Jeans.
Got
and
it.
The,
okay.
In the ad, they make reference to her having good jeans and that... You know, play on words.
Jeans.
Right.
Yeah, got it.
And the uproar was that this was a coded reference to superior Aryan genetic makeup.
Okay.
So I'm not going to seriously ask you whether you think this was a coded call to Aryanhood. Okay.
I don't think so. But without knowing more about the situation, I think they were just playing off of the
clearly
the
a
two
play
words.
On words. Yeah. Yes. So what I would like to get your thoughts on, though, is whether and to what level it's okay to admire members of the opposite sex. I mean, clearly, Sydney Sweeney is getting her roles because of the way she looks.
Physical thoughts. Attributes, beauty, yeah. Yeah, that's probably a very, very probable in her case. And I don't think there's a problem with admiring the beauty that God has given to people or their strength or their qualities. I think it's a good thing to recognize objectively, okay, that's a beautiful person. That's a very intelligent person. That's a talented person. There's a recognition of the beauty of what God has done in that individual, if we keep it at that level. I think when you start looking at it in a possessive way or an envious way.
Or a lustful way.
Well, that's what I mean by possessive.
Yeah.
Because with lust, you're trying to get something from that person. You're trying to bring them to yourself to please yourself. And so if you're looking at a person lustfully, that's clearly problematic because you're not respecting the integrity of the person, nor are you respecting yourself in that instance. That's why the church is constantly taught that lust is not a good thing. Love is a good thing. And appreciating the beauty and goodness of others is a good thing. Recognizing the beauty of the Creator in the creatures is a beautiful thing. And the other big thing that I think that comes in here is, especially for women, because of that, their capacity to see the nuance of difference between people. There's a dynamic that goes on in women. This is brought out in many scientific studies about their tendency for social comparison.
Right.
And that women have a heightened ability of social comparison, which can lead very easily to envy.
All right, but I think there's something else going on here. Going back to in the last few decades, starting in the 90s, I think there's been, this concerted effort to jam a new ideal of the feminine.
Of beauty.
Down our throats. Mm-hmm. Okay, so back in the 70s and 80s, the ads that featured females were typically along the lines of, the Farrah Fawcett or...
Again, you're throwing out names I don't know.
You know Farrah Fawcett from...
No, I don't.
Oh, come on.
Sorry.
You don't know who Farrah Fawcett is?
Is that... That's a person?
Yes.
I
Charlie's Angels? The show?
I never watched an episode of Charlie's Angels in my life.
All right.
Sorry, Chris. Sorry to disappoint you.
In the 90s, it seems like it started with the Calvin Klein models where they started to... have these jeans ads
tight and skinny.
Well, yeah, there was the what's known as the heroin chic. The models were more trending towards the pale skin and more of a thin androgynous look. There's not a male that I know that thinks that that's the feminine ideal. Do you think that there's anything more going on here in this trying to redefine what the feminine ideal is?
I don't know. I'd have to study that a little bit more and see.
I think there is. I think this
well,
is...
Tell me what you think, Chris.
Well, I mean, right, Satan, he tries to promote discontent, envy, and discord.
Right.
And I think this is another attack by Satan on humanhood.
It could be.
Or humanity.
It could be something undermining the confidence of women, because most women are not super slender and skinny like the models are.
So
it could be a way of destabilizing women, making them feel inferior or insecure and
less confident. Well, and also to distort our definition of beauty.
Yeah.
You know, that's the main thing that I see is these models in ads are generally, you know, waif thin and bony. And, you know, most men, at least that I know, the Kate Upton, do you know who she is? The Sports Illustrated.
I've heard the name, but I don't,
swimsuit model, Sports Illustrated swimsuit model. Who?
Oh, I try to avoid that episode.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard to read the news and not see the cover of the Sports Illustrated. I don't read the magazine ever, but
I don't think I've seen that.
I don't even think there's a
cover of the Sports Illustrated for like 25 years.
Well, when she became like the hot thing in, you know, media because of her cover, she's a definitely more full woman.
Okay.
Certainly
voluptuous
not,
would yes, be the word probably.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was this backlash against her because of her, you know, because men were responding to her versus the
super skinny girls.
Yeah.
I don't know, Chris. It's funny because in other certain cultures in history, they have valued big corpulent women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Eskimo population, they prefer women that are big and, kind of, you know, they can keep them warm during the winter.
Right.
So there are different norms of beauty that change from culture to culture. Why is there, you know, this fascination with skinny girls at this time? I don't know.
I think the fascination is not in the coming from the mainstream male. I think the fascination is coming from the media.
That's entirely possible, coming from the fashion industry itself and certain norms that they interiorize. It could also be coming from testing. They might be doing, you know, subtle A-B testing on us as a population to see which photographs people gravitate towards. And based on that, they put more of those out there. I mean, it'd be interesting to study that. But at the end of the day, from a Catholic perspective, I think we come back to how do we look at other people? Do we respect them as an individual? Do we respect their dignity? Or do we look on them as an object for my own personal gratification? And I think when we learn to truly respect the dignity of other people, then that's when we set aside the lust, we set aside the envy too, and we recognize, okay, this is the body type God has given me, and this and given my spouse or my girlfriend or my boyfriend, whatever it is, and love them and respect them as God has made them.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. As you probably know, AI is making many existing jobs obsolete.
But it's never going to make obsolete the work of a priest.
Thankfully.
That's a good thing. Radio shows like this, although I've heard some AI podcasts that are pretty impressive. It's hard to tell that they're actually not real human beings.
Absolutely could. You could do a show with just AI and not know.
We should try that, Chris.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that next time.
Maybe that's happening right now. Maybe we're not here.
Oh, we're faking it. No. Okay. No, I'm looking at you. We're real. But so we'll unpack
this
a little more for us.
This solution. There's a solution being proposed, which has been proposed in the past to ill effect from Silicon Valley, basically doing universal basic income. So,
okay.
So economists and welfare
give everyone a stable salary, whether they work or not.
Right. So people began advocating for UBI back in the 60s as a solution to poverty. It universally failed.
Yeah.
Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, thinks instead of money that everyone could receive an ownership stake in whatever AI creates.
Mm.
So the Catholic Church teaches that work is essential for human dignity.
Mm.
It emphasizes that work is a form of participation in God's creation and that every human being is called to contribute to society. So what are your thoughts on this? Is work an essential part of God's plan, or is it just a means of fulfillment for man?
I don't think those two things are necessarily counterposed. If we look at the Genesis account of work, you know, it comes as an after effect of original sin. That God tells Adam, you will have to till the ground and get food by the sweat of your brow. So already, though, in God's plan, he was in the garden and he was doing work. I mean, but work in a different sense. And it was easy and pleasant. And he was able to eat in that way. After original sin, now it's the toil element comes in. And that's what we experience today in the state of original sin in which humanity is. There's things that we have to do in our work that we don't enjoy. And there's other things we do enjoy. And so finding an employment or a career or a job that provides for your family that you enjoy, that's the sweet spot. But there are always going to be things that even within a job that you really like, things that you may like less. I was talking to a guy the other day and he said, I hate all that stuff, the administrative stuff, my work. I just want to go out and sell. It's like, okay, well, if you can do that, great. But there's always going to be some element of back office or setting up your appointments that you're going to have to do that you may not like, or even for other people, vice versa.
But even if you don't like the job that you're doing, there is a sense of fulfillment that comes with being able to provide for yourself and to provide for your family, even if you don't like your job.
That's right. I finished a really interesting book just 2 weeks ago called Critical Influence. And they use all kinds of really interesting stories in the book. A lot of them taken from this place, which is a rehab for convicted felons, in which they have not had any experience of gainful employment. So they got involved in drugs or drug dealing or stealing or different forms of crime over their lives. Never had a real experience of working or studying hard. And that's why they got pulled into that delinquent lifestyle. But in this rehab program, what they do is they give these young people an experience of the value of hard work, of accomplishing something, of working together. And it's experiences they haven't had before. And it's a really fascinating program because they have several companies with these convicts. They have a moving company, they have an accounting company, they have a couple of other different types of companies. But all of the employees are convicts who are trying to rehabilitate into society. And one of the key experiences is the value of a job well done.
All right. So back to the original question. Mm-hmm. Is work part of God's plan for salvation and also a fulfilling emotion that man experiences for doing it?
Most definitely. Because St. Thomas Aquinas describes this in a powerful way. He says that God is the creator. He makes all things. His creative power has brought all creation into being. And we as human beings were made in the image and likeness of God. When we create, when we work, when we do things, we are actually participating. And that's the key word that he uses, participating in the creative work of the creator. In a sense, it likens us to God. So work, properly understood, is not merely a punishment. There are always going to be elements in the state of original sin that we live in that are problematic and we don't like. But in its bigger sense, work is a participation with the creator in his creative work. And that's awesome.
I 100% agree. As you know, that we've talked about before, man being co-creators in God's universe. And, for that reason alone, I think UBI is something that we should stay away from.
Well, and I think this is one of the reasons where you look at guys who retire and then they think, I'm aiming to retire so I can go play golf and travel. A lot of times they go downhill really quickly because they lost their sense of purpose and they realize that all that storing up for retirement, like they're unhappy because we're meant to contribute in a creative way to God's creative work in the world.
Well, the last part of this, though, is that every time there's talk that jobs are being eliminated and what are these people going to do, invariably, the technology creates more jobs. Take, for example, when Microsoft Outlook came about, it basically eliminated the need for a million secretaries. Mm-hmm. Or
greatly reduced it, at least.
Yeah. And the number of jobs that came out of that greatly increased, 5, 10, 100-fold the million secretarial jobs that were lost.
And it's always the same. When new technology comes out, there's going to be new avenues, new places for work, and other places where it's not. I mean, we don't have, washerwomen anymore because we have washing machines. Right. There's so many things that have been freed up in our labor to focus in other areas, and that's not a bad thing. But we do have to try to humanize the transition point. So realizing that there's human beings in the mix who need maybe to learn some new job skills or to be a little bit of help to find the next step in their career.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. August 6th, 2025 marked the 80th anniversary of the U.S. bombing of Japan with the atom bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The first bomb killed as many as 70,000 people in Hiroshima. The second killed 40,000 people in Nagasaki three days later. Since 1945, the world has debated whether President Truman and Prime Minister Churchill were morally right to use weapons of mass destruction. Some have argued that Japan was about to surrender and that it was therefore morally wrong to deploy the weapons. Most people agree, though, that Japan was preparing for a fanatical defense of its homeland and that the cost of the Allied forces to overcome that would have been possibly as many as another million lives lost on the Allied side.
Right.
So the Church's stance, the Catholic Church's stance at the time and still today, unequivocally rejects the rationale for the use of the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily on the grounds that civilian casualties were part of the equation.
And the reason for that is that it's a kind of a proportionalist reasoning that was used by to justify the dropping of the bomb.
Well, so is this my question to you, is this stance of the church basically coming down to the church's belief that the ends does not justify the means?
That's only a part of it, Chris. So part of it is the end doesn't justify the means, but also the calculation of X lives versus Y lives. That is an insufficient way to look from a moral standpoint at the question here. And there's a lot more elements I want to bring into play here, because at the end of the day, the result was it brought the Japanese to surrender. And if you look at the historical trajectory, it's really clear that the Japanese, they had buckled down for a last ditch defense of the homeland with
men, women, and children. Well, and they already indicated they were going to do this with kamikaze pilots.
Yes, and if you, anyone who's a student of World War II history, if you study the history of Guadalcanal or Tarawa or any of the Pacific islands that the Marines and the U.S. Navy and the soldiers retook, these were bloody battles fought to the last man with suicide efforts, and it was fanatical because of the Bushido code that the Japanese soldiers had been imbued with. So they were not going to give up, and they would fight to the last man. So in that context, I can understand where the U.S. government was like, how do we save the lives? And I have a personal connection with this, Chris. This is not merely a hypothetical question. I would probably not be here today if the U.S. had not dropped that bomb. My grandfather, Harold Lampe, was on a troop ship heading out of San Francisco to go for the invasion of the Japanese mainland. And when they dropped the bomb, his ship was diverted to the Philippines, and he was able to come home 3 months later. So I probably wouldn't be here.
Right.
Okay, so this is not merely a hypothetical question. And we know that there were, about 200,000 people or so that died in the dropping of these bombs. I think the main crux of the problem from a moral standpoint was the use of proportionalistic reasoning, and secondly, dropping it on civilian populations. If the bomb had been dropped on troops, Japanese troops that were defending in a certain area, it probably could have had the same effect from a scare tactic for the Japanese government, realizing, oh my gosh, a bomb of this magnitude, what could that do if it's dropped on one of our cities? I think it could have had the same effect had it been dropped on the actual troops.
So do you think that was the church's stance at the time, that the actual bomb itself was not problematic, it was the target?
I would have to look and see what the actual reasoning was. And I don't think the church has ever come out with an official stance on this question, at least not to my knowledge.
I think they have. I think that it's been unequivocal that it was morally...
I would agree that there are moral theologians who have pronounced in their personal opinion.
Okay.
But the church, as far as like an official stance from the Pope, I don't recall reading.
Neither
and,
do I.
And that could be my own ignorance there. So I'm open to correction if that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know that to be the case.
But definitely there are moral theologians who have argued that what the United States did was wrong. And there's been also moral theologians who have argued that that it was right. Now, I would take kind of a middle ground with the nuances that I've shared. I don't think the proportionalistic reasoning is adequate, and I don't think it should have been dropped on the civilian populations. Just as a side note, the two cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are the two cities that had the highest per capita Catholic population in the entire country.
Hmm.
And there are actually really there's some miracles that took place, too, in that the dropping of the bomb of people who were praying in a Catholic church, praying the rosary, and the bomb just went around them and didn't affect them. Other people whose lives were saved. So there are some really cool stories that came out of that as well. It's, you know, when I have that personal connection to the reality of what took place, it's hard for me to, you know, now very comfortably 80 years later, look back and say, oh, what they did was wrong. We sometimes don't understand the full context of what was going on at that time and what the limitations of knowledge and circumstances were. So we have to be careful not to judge so harshly our forebears.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
When Angela Radevsky lost her 55-year-old husband unexpectedly earlier this year.
No, this isn't some famous person I should know. No,
this is a news article I read 2 days ago.
Oh, okay.
So she didn't settle for a framed photo or a memory box of her husband. The 35-year-old nurse from West Virginia made the decision to have a section of her late husband's tattooed skin surgically removed after his death and then framed and displayed in her home. The tattoo is a full-color Pittsburgh Steelers helmet.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you think of that?
Oh, that's repulsive. Oh, gosh, I don't even know what to say. Chris, you're just trying to get a reaction out of me right now. I think everyone knows that I don't get to see the topics beforehand. Chris just springs them on me and you got my knee-jerk reaction out of this one.
All right, well, let's step back. What do you think about tattoos generally? So Leviticus 19:28 mentions not marking the body,
mm-hmm.
but many theologians say that this directive was specific to the cultural practices of the time and doesn't apply universally today. What are your thoughts on tats generally?
Generally with tattoos, I think that my general preference is no tattoos, simply because God created us without tattoos. Why do we need to add them? Now, then you could say, well, why do we need to add clothes then? Or why do we need to pierce ears or wear jewelry? If there are things that beautify the temple of the body, the temple of the Holy Spirit that we are, I don't have a problem with them. So there are tasteful tattoos that are not defacing the beauty of the human person and maybe are helping to accentuate something. That I wouldn't have a problem with. But when it starts to get like full-arm tattoos or gruesome depictions of things or things that are they're not artfully done. It's just like poor quality. Or if you're putting tattoos on a person's face, or if you're doing tattoos that are drawing attention to a person's body parts in a provocative or lustful way, then I think we're getting into some problematic areas. So again, just to state my point, I think let's respect the temple of the Holy Spirit that we are. If we're enhancing the beauty, okay, fine and good.
I don't have a problem with tats. I don't have a tattoo. But what I do have a problem with is people getting tattoos at a certain age. As my kids have left for college, I've told them my various rules of engagement, one of which is if you go get a tattoo, then you've made an adult decision that's going to affect you the rest of your life. If you're adult enough to make that decision, you're adult enough to pay for your own tuition. So my message is, if you're going to get a tattoo, wait till you're out of college, wait till you're fully formed and not making some decision that you might regret later.
Yeah. Well, that's oftentimes the case. You see the tattoos that people get, like their girlfriend, and then, later on they got to scratch out the tattoo because they're no longer with that girl. I mean, it's laughable, but it happens. And you see the sailors who were in the Navy and back in the 1940s or 50s, and those tattoos don't look so hot 50 or 60 years later.
Well, they never age well.
No, they don't.
crossed wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. A Wall Street Journal article details a recent and increasing trend of men filing lawsuits stemming from abortions obtained by their partners or ex-partners. The cases are principally flowing from the state of Texas, which allows a parent to sue for the wrongful death of an unborn child. It seems to me that we rarely, if ever, even think or talk about the man in the situation of an abortion. What are your thoughts?
Well, Chris, I think it's a case of our collective consciousness catching up with the underlying reality. We've been told that from an ideological standpoint that, number one, that this thing that's in you is just tissue. Well, we know from a scientific standpoint that it's a baby. It's a human fetus. It is a independent human life that begins at the moment that egg is fertilized. That's a new human being. It's not a new rabbit. It's not a new, pig. It is a human being. And so we're recognizing that. But I think we're also coming to recognize that a woman doesn't create a child independently. It takes a man and a woman. And so because there is a joint effort there, there's also a joint responsibility. Men need to take responsibility for their children. And there's also a joint right for that life of protecting that child. So it's not, you know, we've heard this ideological approach that it's my body, it's my right, I can do what I want. But that's not what the facts show us in the case. So I think there's a growing awareness of that in society. You know, and along these lines, Chris, I have, you know, a friend of mine who unfortunately encouraged his girlfriend to get an abortion when he was in college. And to this day carries a tremendous weight of regret about that situation. Every time he looks at his four children, he remembers that. And it pains him deeply to know what he did. And that post-abortion syndrome, which is a reality for a lot of men and a lot of women, it's not just a woman's problem. It's a woman's reality, responsibility, and also the man's. So that's kind of my first reaction thought to that.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.